quite a lot of familiar faces, good to see you. Actually, what struck me was that quite a lot of you look just like you did 4 years ago. So you're doing pretty well, really. I joined TFM in 1994, moved on in 2014, so nearly 20 years. And for the last 4 years, I've been a mission development advisor in Sheffield Diocese. I've got a few photos, because, you know, when you come back and see family, as it were, you've got to show them some things, haven't you? We're in God's own county, or at least that's what everyone in Yorkshire tells me it is. There are other people who tell me it's Dorset, but we'll forget that. Just three photos there. The woods are literally 5 minutes from our door. It's a lovely, lovely place to live, really. The team in the middle is my team, with one exception. That's Steph is no longer our administrator. We've got a different administrator now. And then we get proper winters up north. Not every year. But that was the first winter we were there. We got a couple of real dollops of snow, and this winter was quite interesting as well. We can go walking all the year round, which is lovely. We love the hills. We love being in Yorkshire. Actually, the two walking pictures, the one with the sunshine is kind of end of January. It was nice. And the other one's end of February, and the snow come back down. We've got the tour to Yorkshire, and that's often a mixture for me of pleasure and work. We get the churches involved. That was on the Côte d'Or. Where were we? No, it's the other one this time. Côte d'Or Deep Car. So that was, and we got ice hockey as well as loads of championship football, which I'm glad to say, Roger, we're not joining. Only just, absolutely. And then a bit of our family. So Millie is now, I think, nearly six, is that right? And Ollie is coming up for two. He is two. And Rachel on the other end, so there's Sarah's kids, our grandchildren. I know you're saying you don't look old enough for, well, Sue doesn't look old enough for grandchildren. Rachel is just about to finish her medicine degree, so she starts work as a medic in end of July. So, and I've been asked to bring a wider perspective, really, on evangelism, as Paul's hinted, and I will do that. But I want to start with a very short video clip, because I thought this might encourage us. So I think it will just autoplay. So, really short video. Why start there? Because I think it's important for us to have our bedrock foundation confidence that mission starts with God, not with us. We see that unfold as it showed there in the scriptures. We see it take human form in Jesus. If you like, the pinnacle of God's mission, isn't it? That God comes into the world in the nature of his Son. To reach out to us. And we see it continued in the church, albeit quite often imperfectly, but from Pentecost right to today, the mission of God in the church. And whatever the season, whatever the prevailing culture, and we've already talked a bit about that, whatever the soil, you can choose whichever image you like, whatever the situation we find ourselves in, God remains the God of mission. And that should give us confidence and courage One of Roger's great phrases that I always remember is keeping the main thing the main thing. And we need to do that. It's really important, especially when we're discouraged from doing so. Paul put up some scriptures earlier, and I'd looked through the newsletter as I was preparing the talk, and it struck me, one of those scriptures from the December retreat, Revelation 3:8, "See, I put before you an open door." And we may not be sure where that door leads, that's true, but we can be certain that God wants us to continue to spread good news. That's where I want to start today. In all the things that I've got to say, as it were, about bringing a wider perspective to start there. And in outline, this is where I hope to go. I'll begin with those parts of my work which are closest to the things that TFM is involved in. Then go on to some broader considerations, good news of things from around the country, but also some wider aspects of my role. And if I've got time, I'm conscious I'm not very good at sticking to time, I ad lib and stuff. I've got a few hot off the press items, and then if we've still got time, you can get some questions in, but we'll see how we go. And all the way through those, I'm going to try and reflect on what might this mean for us in mission, for you, for me, and so on, and see how we go. So, let's go to this. We've already had this verse quoted today, haven't we? This is what the Lord says, "Stand at the crossroads and look. Ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls." As you'll see, it's the TFM 2018 Bible verse, but it was also the verse chosen by Bishop Stephen for the mission in Sheffield Diocese in 2015 that was called Crossroads. You've got the word crossroads in the title. And the context for the verse, I think, is really interesting. Because I know when we had that mission, we were thinking, oh, maybe we can speak on that. But actually, the rest of the chapter is pretty hard work. This is the really one encouraging verse in the whole chapter. So the situation is a city under siege and a sense that some, perhaps many, were underplaying the seriousness of the situation that faced the people of God. And God was searching for those who, one, would listen, and two, who would be watchmen. Or watch people. It's a really interesting verse. But I say there's a lovely, when I saw it, I thought, well, I'm going to definitely put that in my talk because that relates to a thing that's been really important for us, which is these Northern Bishops' missions. There was a gathering of all the bishops for a retreat on Holy Island, Lindisfarne. It's a place that's sort of pregnant with all kinds of history of mission, isn't it? The Celtic saints went out from Holy Island when Britain was being overrun, really, the Vikings and all that kind of stuff. And it was a tough time, but they were trying to get the message out. And Archbishop Sentamu, from that, called for a re-evangelization of the north of England. That's what he said we needed. Why? Because Christendom is gone. You know, people say, oh, we live in a Christian country. In what sense? I know we have all the history and there are things that are woven into our culture that are actually quite difficult to unweave. So there are Christian elements. Of course there are. You only have to look at a royal wedding and think, why is that? You know, there's lots of things there, aren't there? It's interesting. That's still there. But actually, for the majority of people, there is a massive ignorance of Christianity. And you know that from doing mission. And when I say ignorance, I'm not being unpleasant to people. They just don't know. Using ignorance in a neutral sense. Why have these missions happened? I would say principally, in one sense, because of the passion of the Archbishop of York. He's a bishop, but he's an evangelist at heart. After he'd started doing these missions, you may or may not know this, he took 6 months out. He had to get permission from the Queen to take 6 months out from doing normal bishopy things to basically walk across his diocese, evangelize, pray for healing for people, and so on. He went to all his deaneries over 6 months and spent a week in each of them sharing the gospel, leading hundreds to Christ. So that's one of the reasons why these missions have happened. For me, the involvement in Crossroads, the first of these missions in Sheffield, was one of those Esther moments. You know, when her relative says, who knows but that you've come to this place for such a time as this. So I was less than 6 months into my role, and I was lined up to oversee the Crossroads mission. And it was seen as a huge task. So I'd not long arrived in the diocese, and people going, would you like to oversee this? A big job. You know, and you think, actually, when I looked at it, I thought, well, yes, it is a big job, but how's it different from a walk mission? We've worked with whole dioceses before, and then you've had to work with all the other denominations as well. I only had to organize the Anglicans. Only. but at least I know how they work, and I knew the deaneries. The problem for me was I didn't know so many other people yet, so that was a bit of a challenge. But it's a good way to get to know them and to find out the real gems amongst them. So we worked around the deaneries, drawing on all that previous mission experience, drawing on the basic structure of saying, look, you've got 4 days to do mission. Realistically, this is the sort of thing you can do. Get on with it. And then organizing it through the area deans and so on. What did we learn from doing that first mission? And I would say the feedback from the other missions has been quite similar, really. At the first thing, so some positive things, the bishops were blown away. What I mean by that is they had a residential the week after, a national residential, and all the northern bishops couldn't stop talking about being on mission. The southern bishops were really jealous. Because they'd got out from behind their desks, behind all their knotty problems, and they'd had an opportunity just to go and share the gospel. And they loved it. So that was a really good start. And, of course, that's a massive parallel to our teams, isn't it? So often you've gone on mission and feel you've come back having gained more than you've given, because it's just been that engagement. We had hundreds of events, and thousands of people heard the gospel. What is not to like? That was a good start. The churches were encouraged. Evangelism is possible. Whisper it ever so quietly, but it can even be enjoyable. And then, I can tell you, not many of them believed that before we started. And there have been some ongoing outcomes. One of the most obvious for us is we have a thing called Messy Church at the Rotherham Show. So once a year, there's this massive event that happens at a big park in Rotherham, 70,000 people over the weekend. And it clashed, or coincided, with the dates that we were given for the mission. Initially, the churches saw this as a problem. They went, oh dear, nobody will come to everything because the Rotherham show's up. And so I said to them, well, what if you tried to engage with those 70,000 people? And there was a discussion, and the council actually were really, really helpful. They enabled us to have a pitch for nothing. We had a big tent, and we did 1,000 goodie bags. So it was basically a taster of Messy Church, just to get people in and do something with them around the gospel. And we got 1,000 goodie bags went out, so we had at least 1,000 families through. And the conclusion after the Rotherham show was, well, we can't not do that again next year. So it's now in the third or fourth year. That's happening. And there are a few other examples like that. So that's some positives. Some negatives from the mission, and again, you may reflect, you may think, oh, there's see some parallels here. The weakest area of the whole thing was invitation. So lots of churches plan good events, but then they had very few Christians there. Non-Christians there, I mean. There's plenty of Christians. Sound familiar? Yeah. You know, it's that. And it's an area, and we've had Michael Harvey, the guy who does Back to Church Sunday, we've had him come and did some really good training, and still they haven't got it. So we're still working on that. I had hope for follow-on deanery missions this year to link in with Hope 2018. Take-up has been, I've put little uptake, let's be honest, pathetic uptake so far. I've had one deanery mission, and I've got a couple of events. And you're thinking, we should have been having those all over the diocese. Come on, it was good. Do it again. Because you still haven't cracked it, so do it again, but they won't. Still get the impression that evangelism and missions are optional, are one more thing in the life of busy churches. Now, I wonder if that is a reason why you're finding it difficult to get missions, because I'm finding it difficult to get missions, and in theory, they're supposed to listen to what I got to say. Well, about as much as they listen to the bishop, really. So, but maybe that's a struggle. Bishop Pete made a very interesting comment. He's our new bishop, really good guy, really pleased to have him. He was an excellent evangelist in Cumbria when we went to do the Moving Mountains mission recently. But his comment was, these missions with the bishops are too much focused on the church. We need to get outside more. So I think he's going to enjoy the Pathways mission in Newcastle, where we go next, because we've got at least a couple of pub crawls as part of that, plus some other things. So we'll see how those go. Now, it's possible that bishops are a factor in this. As soon as you have a team led by a bishop, perhaps churches immediately think church. And let's face it, unless you've got somebody like Centimu, the bishops are not exactly big news outside the church, are they? They are a good way in to secondary schools and so on. That still works well. But actually, ordinary people, if you've got the bishop of, I don't know, Pontefract coming, you'll think, who? You know, even if you're a church person, you probably, I've probably made that one up anyway, but you probably won't know. So, you have. Good. Good. So I'm considering doing a kind of broader review of these missions. If I can get a sabbatical, it would be really useful, I think, to try and assess what has been the positive and the and what have been the drawbacks of doing those missions, and possibly to compare them with other missions, maybe Through Faith Mission missions, where we get out more and we do things like door-to-door and pub work and so on. It'd be really interesting to see whether there's something to learn from that, but we'll see whether that happens in the next couple of years. Personal evangelism remains a challenge, remains a dilemma. It's really interesting in the situation that I'm in, because senior staff see it as really key. They understand that nobody else is going to do evangelism for us. It's the one thing that the church has to do. We thought earlier about social action. It's really important to do social action, but actually there are other people engaged in social action. We can partner on that. But nobody else will share the gospel message for us. So they see the urgency. But churches and individual Christians, it seems to me, are less convinced. They are not hammering on my door asking for training. Now, as it happens, in the past week, I've done two training events. Monday night, we had 16 people. That was for one archdeaconry, 15 of them from the host church. Tuesday night, we had 24 people. That was at the church that I go to. 21 of them were from that church, and 3 were from another church, including the vicar. So it wasn't bad. It was a good number of people. What was very interesting, Sue and I were commenting on this, because Sue came. She and I and 2 or 3 others were the only ones under 65 at our event. But it's part, and we've got people in our church who are under 65. We're not like that church where they go, "Oh, you've only got 5 people over 50." But it's interesting, those others didn't come, didn't for whatever reason come to learn about how to share their faith. Very interesting, isn't it? What's going on there? So that's the bishop's missions, and they've all been really positive. They made a big splash, but it's what you do to link that on and to do something more long term is more of a challenge. Some broader things from around the UK, and really these are pieces of good news for you as you're thinking about your work and your mission. The first thing is that mission and evangelism are high priorities in denominational structures these days. I'm going to give you mainly C of E examples because that's what I know, that's what I work in, although some of these are actually broader than that. When they appoint bishops these days, they have 3 key responsibilities. I won't bother you with the other 2, but one of them is mission and evangelism. That's not bad, is it? One of their 3 things that they must focus on is mission and evangelism. Talking Jesus was mentioned earlier, so I'm guessing that quite a few of you will have come across that. If you haven't, look at the website. Some really good stuff. It was a very positive report about the opportunities that we have for witness. We've often said, a lot of people in churches, I think that everyone outside is negative and doesn't want to know about Jesus. And part of the reason for that is because of what they see in the media, where the church is caricatured, ridiculed, etc., or there are certain things that come up and we get hammered again and again. But actually, ordinary people are often not like that, are they? When you go out in mission, you find that people are a lot more open than you than the church gives them credit for. And that's basically all this report says. And they're just bringing out a course to help people share in help people learn how to share their faith better. And we may well try and do that at our church. After the thing on Tuesday, the vicar got up and said, who'd be interested in doing that? And quite a few people said they did. So we just need to trick the under 50s into coming now. Setting God's people free. Anyone heard of that report? No. It's a general synod report, so I don't blame you. But it's actually a good report. If you could look it up, you can download it for free. It's about the ministry of all of the 98% of the Church of England who are not ordained, or whatever it is, you know, most of the Church of England, and saying, how can we, essentially its bottom line is, how can we set them free to be witnesses 24/7? Now, that's got to be a good thing, hasn't it? And so it's also thinking about, not just about going on missions, but how are you a witness in your daily life, when you're at work, or when you're, you know, just going about your business, if you're a retired person or whatever. So that's another thing which is a very positive backdrop. And then Thy Kingdom Come. Anybody been involved in Thy Kingdom Come this time? That is ecumenical. Good, there's quite a few hands there. A huge swell of, admittedly, prayer for evangelism rather than evangelism itself. But then we've had plenty of reference to the importance of prayer already today, haven't we? And we know that we can't do it without it. What I love about it is that it's explicit. The Archbishop of Canterbury says, we are praying that people might come to know Jesus Christ. Now, you can't get much more upfront than that, can you? He's not saying, oh, we're praying that, ooh, the church might be nice or something. He's being very clear on it in a way which probably doesn't sit well with some parts of the Church of England or some parts of other churches. So I think that's terrific. Last year, I cycled or walked around every church in our archdeaconry. So that was about just under 100 miles of cycling and about 70, 80 miles of walking over 8 days. And in just under 80% of the places, people gathered and we had events. And we still had a big beacon event. We had a youth event and various other things. It's got to make a difference. And we're finding that that's a thing which is building. So again, I think it's just a positive backdrop. What might there be to learn for TFM? There was a time when evangelism was not welcome in church structures, so I think it's a good change of climate. There are still some individuals who are hostile. There was a Church Times headline a couple of weeks back, Save Us From These Evangelicals, from some cathedral canon, which was relating to Thy Kingdom Come, and that explicit call. So it's interesting, isn't it? Not everybody's on our side, so just be careful. But for many, there is the realization that this work is central, it is urgent, and they need help. They know that they can't do it on their own. Some positive things. Bigger picture in Sheffield. So some things that we're involved in. This might come across as a bit scattergun, in the sense that these are quite diverse things, but that's intentional. And the reason for that is that I think the challenge of mission is quite complex in our culture and our society. In a way, it's interesting, Paul's already alluded to that in what you need as a new leader. It isn't just one thing. There's kind of a whole load of things to handle. We're also operating, I think, with some quite serious constraints in mission, and I'll probably bring up some of those as we come up. But I put four things on the slide, which I'll refer to just briefly. They're a much wider range of issues, really. Mission action planning, which is the top one, is the bedrock of all that we do. We came together as a new team, and basically the problem was there was a great diocesan vision, but no implementation of it. So you had, you know, all these strategy papers, this is how we're going to grow, this is how we're going to change, but nobody knew what to do with them. So that was our job. And mission action planning was based on a report called From Anecdote to Evidence, which looked at 8 things that make churches either grow or decline, depending on what you do with them. So we said, let's structure our planning around that and get people to realize that they need to be purposeful. We were dealing with churches who'd never planned in their lives. They just go around the year. They go, oh, it's Easter again. Oh, it's Pentecost. Oh, it's harvest. Lovely. Oh, Christmas. You know, and then, oh, look, it's New Year again. And there's no kind of strategy at all. There are lots of churches that were like that. And one of the things in the From Anecdote to Evidence report was having a plan is one of the factors that makes you grow, as opposed to not having a plan. You think, well, how simple is that, for goodness sake? Some of the others are things to do with youth and things to do with welcome and stuff like that. So we put together this thing, and then as people sent in their plans, we looked for the common factors and provided training to help people move forward. And we're beginning to see that making a difference. We're just trying to analyze that at the moment. Mission partnerships, I'll be very brief on those. They're a constraint and an opportunity. Clergy numbers are declining in the Church of England. There's a whole load of people retiring. There's not enough coming in. The reality is fewer vicars, multiple church situations. Churches hate it. They really do. It's one of my main jobs, and it's a real struggle. This change of culture. We want our vicar. And you say to them, look, if one vicar, one church had worked, why are we where we're at? It hasn't worked. So their glorious golden age mentality is an illusion. But we also see the possibilities in it. You can get people working together in teams. You can combat isolation. You can get different gifts. But it's quite a hard sell. So that's one of the things that we do. The MSM course is up there because another big area for us is about fresh expressions of church and pioneering. Somebody said earlier about there's no models for lay people to engage in mission. Oh, there are. There's pioneering. That's one. It's a bit different. Basically, the logic of it is, have people encountered Mission Shape Ministry course, MSM, or a few? It's a great course, got some fabulous stuff in it, but you need to think it through and apply it. That's what you really need to do with it. It basically recognizes that there are some people who will never join Sunday morning church, even lively Sunday morning church. Where I worship, we have a more traditional service and a contemporary service. I would not be embarrassed to invite anyone to either of those. They're both really good services. But I know there are some people for whom that's like going to Mars or at least the moon. You know, it's so out of their experience. So it's about thinking about new ways of doing church where you can engage people. So probably the most obvious and common one is, it would be, and the lightest sort of form of it, is messy church, where you're coming together at a totally different time of the day, and you're doing it in just totally different way, much more interactive. We have a messy church. It's not very successful, but there's people who come to that. I can't imagine them in our other services, but they love it. We have a thing called Natter. You'd all be good at that. It's basically about taking something else that churches do really well, which is coffee mornings. But instead of having all the Christians hiding behind the coffee bar and the punters sitting out there around their tables, they actually go and make an effort to engage with them and to build relationships. And then you have Natter Plus, which is, you say, would you like to stay on and begin to explore Christian faith for half an hour? And they do a short version of Alpha. And then people who come to faith, they then have another level, which is like a Natter cell. But they keep the other Natter going, so you've always got a flow through. And there's a whole load of these around our diocese now. Guys pioneered this. And if you're dubious about the thing about, well, there are people who'd never come into church as it is, think about this. There are 2 million people or something like that who've done Alpha over recent years. If they all join church, why are the numbers as they are? So, you know, it's sort of thinking different ways of doing stuff. Growing the church younger, I've put up there. That was our Diocesan Development Day last year. We have a day every year, which I tend to end up organizing, where we take a particular theme, and we felt that was our strategic issue. We need to grow younger. Sound familiar? I put it in because you're struggling with it, but everyone in the church is struggling with it. We are an aging church, and we need to do something about it. One of the things I want to say is that one of the things we're at pains to say in our situation is that older people in our churches are still active. You've already seen that in my example of evangelism training. They sacrificially serve. They give generously. These are all positives. It's not about clearing them out. If we clear them out, we're really in trouble. And we must value and honor that. But we recognize that we need to rebalance. We need to be connecting much more with children, with youth, and actually with the 20s to 40s, that missing generation in many, many churches. You may go to a church where there's under 18s and there's over 60s. And you think, well, where are the rest of them? What's going on in that situation? For us, the big thing is we have something called the Centenary Project, which is about putting families, children, and youth workers into churches with tapered funding. So we help the churches to get started, and then the idea is it becomes self-financing. And we are finally, we've been doing it for 2 or 3 years, we're seeing an impact on numbers. So a strategic decision to do that. And we've had our first slight increase in 0 to 18s for years. And we're hoping that that will continue. The one that I haven't put a logo on is church planting. It's the newest element, but it's a big theme across the C of E, and you need to be aware of this. Holy Trinity Brompton has been doing church plants for a long time, of course, in London, but also Gas Street in Birmingham. People heard of that? Brand new church right in the middle of Birmingham, 700 young people, and the idea is that that will plant within a year or 2 years, and we'll keep doing that to try to just sort of recolonize a whole stratum of society. Some of our bigger churches do it, particularly Christchurch Fulwood. We're working with them on a particular church plant. But several things about this. The first thing is the sense that multiplication of churches is always going to be more effective in growing the church than simply adding a few people to a few big churches. Planting new churches always makes more of a difference. We've got areas with no viable current churches. We've got certain parts of our diocese, in Anglican terms at least, where there is very little. Some of the really tough places, and maybe all the other denominations that we're drawn as well. So we have to plant something new in. There's a thing now called strategic development funding. Oh, that sets your pulse racing, doesn't it? It's about bidding for money from central resources to do something you couldn't do on your own. And we're looking at the resource Minster Model Church for that. And I'm currently working on that, and that'll be one of the themes for prayer in a bit. But it also links with the fresh expressions issue, because we're not talking here about cloning churches. We're talking about how can we plant something new into an area to do something differently. So it's a big theme. What are the lessons here? I think nationally and locally, these are challenging times for the church. It's again why I really appreciate that Jeremiah 6 reading. If people say, we just do this and it'll be fine, it will not just be fine. We are in a difficult situation, but we have a God who is the Missio Dei, don't we? The God of mission. That's why I want to start there as well, that confidence. People are coming to faith, but the age demographic works against us. As soon as we're getting them in, they're all falling off the other end, aren't they? Falling off their perch. It's a bit of a disaster. So, but I think, thankfully, the wake-up call has been heard, not just in the C of E, around the denominations. And these things are all evidence of a robust, imaginative kind of response with a belief that the God of mission is still in the business of growing his kingdom. But it also acknowledges that we are the ones who need to change if that's going to happen. Paul said that earlier, you know, just being honest and going, well, we don't really get all this app stuff and whatever else. When we send out stuff in the diocese, we've got churches that don't have internet. Or at least people in churches who don't have it. Can you send it by paper? And you just think, I just want to headbutt them. But in another way, you've got to do it because... Pardon?
Not taller than
them. No, sorry. I'll get them in the knees. But at the same time, you know, that's where they're at. But you're thinking, well, we've got other people on the other end who are thinking, why are you still using paper? So anyway, there we go. But the same old is basically not an option, is it? So, right, very briefly, my hot-off-the-press things. Just three things I've put on here. And then I'll stop because I need to take a few questions. So just been to the Missioners Network Summer Gathering in sunny Blackpool, and three totally unrelated things. The top left picture is a picture of one of our rough estates. Bishop Philip North gave a passionate appeal for us to engage in deprived areas. And he quoted Luke 4 and Isaiah 61, where he says he believes that God will bring renewal from among the downtrodden. And it's very much his drum that he bangs, but he's got a point. And that estate there, Wing Gardens, I'm working with them at the moment. There's a terrific church army evangelist on there who's led about 50 people to Christ over the last year. And that's a church which is growing in a tough area. We've got one or two of them. Most of the churches in tough areas really struggle. One of his comments was, and it's one for you to think about, churches in tough areas, he said they grow to 30 or 40 and then that's it. He said, I think that's because they operate basically a family model. He said, and I think we should run with that. When they've got to 30 to 40, we just plant another one on the same estate and just grow lots of 30 to 40 size churches. He said, I don't think that's a problem. The bottom, Church Army research on young adults. I've put the, you won't be able to get it down quickly enough probably, but that's the reference on the website. Just look up Church Army young adults research. They've done a whole load of case studies of how we can reach 20s and 30s. And their headline is not as difficult as you think. So you can have a look at those. They've included case studies of ones that have failed and why they failed. And I thought that was good. That's important for us to understand. And then we had the National Children's Officer speak to us on the potential of toddler groups. Her basic gist was that too many churches run toddler groups and are afraid to mention Jesus because it might worry people. She said, mention Jesus. Make them explicitly Christian. People are coming to a church. They're not scared of that fact. They know what they're coming to. And she said, some of the research shows that there's formative stuff going on in children's minds between 0 and 5. And it also, of course, helps you to reach their parents who are 20s and 30s. So she's saying, I think this is a massive area for mission. And her comment was that there are only three or possibly four dioceses in the whole of the Church of England who have a dedicated person for reaching young children. And you think that's really at preschool. That's really interesting if it's got that much potential. So just a few hot off the press things, but I will shut up and take the odd question if you'd like to ask any. It's a bit of a whistle stop tour, but there's lots of positive stuff going on, I think is what I wanted to hear. But it is in a challenging situation, challenging financially and challenging in various other structural ways as well. George. Yeah.
And they never did. And her husband said, when are we going to do it? Well, if we do it, it might frighten them away.
Yeah.
That was that. But the toddlers, Tavistock Methodist Church, could have run 10 sessions a week of run for the tops if they'd had the staff.
Yeah.
So it's our best form of outreach.
Yeah.
Because they were getting to the mums and the dads and the grannies and grandpas and all the children.
Yeah.
Because they were talking about
it. Yeah. Sue's involved with our toddlers group and they have, again, a waiting list. And that's since it was taken over by different people to lead it and they made it more explicit. And actually, because of the waiting list, if people don't come, you have to ring them up and say, are you still part of the group? Because we've got people waiting. And this has actually caused people to come more regularly because they're frightened of losing their place now. So actually, it's become more explicit, but the take-up and the attendance has improved. And it's a mix. So you're not ramming it down their throats. That's important. So you have the wheels on the bus and all those. Sorry if I've just put that song in your mind. you have all that as well. But you have the scriptures. You have your Christian songs. You have a bit of prayer, and you can do it explicitly. Tom. Yep.
People are so pressured with work and their apps and taking work home. So to do something different on that sort of a modern estate where people are living,
yep.
Necessarily the rundown area, is
Yeah. Now, usually there are things.
When you own a coffee shop or something in the shopping area of that estate, maybe not so much the village hall, but if the church was one of these very modern ones, like the one at Warrington and Peterborough, that you can double up as your hall.
Yeah. Just to pick that up, usually the churches do address this. So, for example, one of the pioneers in our diocese who I work with is a guy called Phil Barringer, who works on the Waverley estate. And the church has bought a house there, put him on there as a pioneer, and he's building networks locally. It's quite slow work, but he's doing that. Now, alongside him doing that is a massive Pentecostal church called Hope, who have a building down the parkway into Sheffield, and they're talking about selling that and building a mega church on that estate. You know, they know the Anglicans are doing stuff, but who cares? We'll do it as well. So sometimes you get uncoordinated efforts, but it's good that they want to do something. And we have other places where people are doing that or other examples that we know of. But it takes a bit of thinking about. So near here, I mean, North Stowe, there will be a church on there. And I was party to some of the early discussions of that before I moved. But it's quite tricky working in new housing areas. There is a new housing areas group, and there is learning coming from it, because it's actually quite difficult to work in a place that has no community as such yet. And it can all be very transient at the beginning, so you've got to work quite hard to get in. We're coming to the end of our time. Got maybe time for one more. I mean, I just never worked with Gideon's. No, I'm only joking. I was winding you up. One of the interesting things, part of the, when we did the bishop's mission, I was looking for literature. And I went to a conference, and Roy Crown was there. He used to be Youth for Christ, but some people know Roy. Roy from East End of London, you know. So he says, I've got these gospels. He says, you can have these for free. So I said to Roy afterwards, I said, how many can you have for free, Roy? He said, what are you thinking of? I said, well, I got this diocesan mission. He said, what do you want then, 10,000? I said, yeah, roughly. We had 11,000 gospels from them and gave them out. So it's the Gideon principle. But not Gideon as such, and I think there's great value in that, well worth doing. One of the bits of research is that quite a lot of people come to faith simply through reading the scriptures, and that's still a proven track. So, Lady Gideon's right. But also, I think it is about. I mean, parachurch is also TFM, and there is value in work. You know, I know that from the other side. And part of the thing is about how to equip people. Just to pick up on the evangelism training, because apart from the pioneers, we have lay parish evangelists, but they have to train a bit like lay readers, but a bit less time. And I have a network of them. In fact, one of them would have been here. Pat's not here, is she? No, she was coming. But other dioceses are doing other things like that as well. So there are some other evangelist tracks. But on the whole, TFM provides the most opportunities for that, or particularly did when you had the walks, of course, because you had a lot more volume of people then that you could take. So that was quite important. That'll do for me, I think. Thank you.